Thanks very much, and apologies for the technical glitch. The good news is that the talk might finish earlier than it might have if you saw all the slides, but you will see the slides in due course, but I will try and talk you through them. Might not be easy, but I'll try and do that. As Ian said, I'm Director of Public Health in Lanarkshire. A lot of public health to do in Lanarkshire, certainly. I'm speaking in a personal capacity. That's because, although I'm a member of SABTO, and that's an advisory committee set up at a UK level to advise the four ministers of health within the UK and their respective departments on the safety of blood, tissues and organs. And funnily enough, it does have a disproportionate number of people from Scotland on it. The chair, for example, is John Forsyth, who's a transplant surgeon through in Edinburgh. And we have other representatives from the Blood Transfusion Service, from the Tissue Service as well. I suppose the reason why I got the job of coming to speak to Glasgow Skeptics was because I was a member of the steering group which SABTO set up, the Blood Donor Selection Steering Group. And that group looked at a number of issues, and I'll talk you through those. But it was very obvious to us within SABTO, and remember, we're just an advisory group. We can make recommendations. Whether ministers accept those recommendations are up to them, and we'll come to what happened to our recommendations in due course. We were asked to look at donor deferral, that is, asking people not to donate blood, and deferrals were introduced really in the early 1980s in a response to the AIDS epidemic and the lack of adequate testing at that time. And those deferrals were considered necessary to try and reduce the risk of transfusion, transmitted HIV and other infections. And that policy of men who have sex with men deferral was reviewed following that in 2001 and also again in 2006. So it's not something that's been set in stone. It's been reviewed periodically since the 1980s. And that was reviewed by a predecessor group of SABTO, and that was the Advisory Committee for the Microbiological Safety of Blood, Tissues and Organs for Transplantation. And SABTO took over its functions about 4 years ago now. Following the review that group made in 2006, it was advised that there should be studies on compliance with the deferral criteria, and that was recommended. So 5 years ago, they made some recommendations and further studies on men who have sex with men and their compliance with donor deferral. What were we looking at when a year ago when the Blood Donor Selection Steering Group was still doing its work? At that point, all donors were permanently deferred if they'd ever been given money or drugs for sex, if they'd ever injected or had been injected with illegal or non-prescribed drugs. All donors were deferred for 12 months after having sex with anyone who'd ever been given money or drugs for sex, or anyone who'd ever injected drugs, or anyone who had ever had sex in parts of the world where HIV and AIDS is very common, and that includes most countries in Africa, and anyone who was HIV, HBC or HCV positive. And male donors were permanently deferred if they'd ever had oral or anal sex with another man. Female donors were deferred for 12 months after having sex with a man who'd ever had oral or anal sex with another man. So that was the selection criteria. The group itself was asked to review the evidence base for donor deferral and exclusion within the United Kingdom, within the four countries of the UK, in relation to sexual behaviours, and make recommendations to SABTO on the most appropriate way to ensure the safety of the blood supply. And more specifically, the steering group was asked to comment on the appropriateness of continuing the lifetime exclusion of men who have sex with men, MSM, and the appropriateness of continuing the lifetime exclusion of individuals who accept money or drugs for sex, that is, commercial sex workers. And the reasons for considering the change in the deferral criteria were varied. There has been an increased understanding of the natural history and epidemiology of transfusion-transmitted infections. There have been improvements in testing and processes, nucleic acid technology, for example, increased automation. There have been reductions in systematic errors in testing. There have been changes to the legislation, the Equality Act of 2010. I'll just say something about that in a minute. Social and ethical changes over time. And following the 2006 recommendation on compliance, there was now recent information on compliance. Coming back to the Equality Act of 2010, that prohibits discrimination on grounds of sexual orientation by a public service provider, that's Section 29. And that act applies to goods and services. But there was a degree of uncertainty whether blood donation was considered a service within the Act. And because of that lack of clarity, specific legislation was introduced within the Act covering blood services. And that provides that it's not unlawful for a person operating a blood service to refuse to accept someone's donation of blood, provided they've got reliable evidence that accepting it would put the public or the individual donor at risk, and that such a refusal is reasonable based on clinical, epidemiological, or other data obtained from a source which is reasonable or to rely on. In terms of the risks reported for newly identified infections in the UK, the steering group looked at the data from the Health Protection Agency. You will get this in the slides, but I'll talk you through the table. And that was data from published in 2008 by the Health Protection Agency. It looked at risks associated with hepatitis B infection, of which there are an estimated 180,000 people within the UK, increasing annually by about 7,700 each year. HCV, estimated 185,000 people within the UK, increasing by about 8,500 each year. And HIV, about 83,000 people within the UK, 73% of whom are diagnosed. And an annual increase of about 7,300 per year. For HBV, the risk factors were 10% were men who had sex with men, heterosexual sex, 63%, and intravenous drug users, 13%. HCV, overwhelmingly, there were intravenous drug users, over 90%. And for HIV, the spread was 42% men who have sex with men, 50% heterosexual sex, and 2% IDUs. The working group itself, or the steering group itself, looked at a number of transfusion-transmitted infections. We looked at HBV, HCV, HIV. We considered human herpes virus 8 and syphilis as part of the review. But we didn't look at VCJD, HTLV, or West Nile virus because there was no evidence of increased prevalence in men who have sex with men or amongst commercial sex workers. And we know that the risk from unknown infections and transfusion-transmitted infections, they come from a variety of sources, not just from sexual transmission. That's not the only route. And it may not be appropriate to base referrals only on one route of infection. Certainly, transmissible asymptomatic infections are a concern. Over the last 30 years or so, we've seen 25 new infectious agents which have been identified, either through changes in the existing organisms emerging in different geographical areas, infectious agents being identified as a cause of known disease and old infections re-emerging. So a number of challenges for the blood transfusion service there. We know that lab and clinical surveillance systems have improved since the 1980s. International blood services are alert to the emergence of previously unidentified infectious agents. We've learned from our experience over the last 30 years. And international health systems react much faster to developing outbreaks. An example of that would be, in a broader infectious sense, the H1N1 outbreak of flu. And when you go to give blood, you can be deferred. You can be asked not to give blood. And that's done in a number of ways. One of those is by individual donors completing a health check questionnaire when attending a donor session. And they can be deferred on the basis of how they respond to that questionnaire. And looking at the data from Scotland, from the Scottish National Blood Service in 2010, just under 200,000 donors attended to donate, 199,061. Of those, 62 were deferred due to current MSM deferral. 43 were deferred due to a past history of drug use, and 2 were deferred due to a history of accepting money or drugs for sex. So a small problem overall in terms of donation, but nonetheless, it's one that the blood transfusion service needs to deal with. In terms of blood donation testing, blood donations are screened for a number of mandatory tests, and those have been in place since the 1940s with the test for syphilis, which is a single sample testing. There are tests for HBS antigen, surface antigen, from the 1970s, anti-HCV from 1991. Most significantly, it was HCV and nucleic acid testing, which came in 2000, that has proved to be very important in terms of screening blood donations. And that's a triple nucleic acid test for HBV, for HCV, and for HIV. Part of the problem of testing for donations is that there's a window period, and very simply that means that there's a period where the virus is present within a donated sample and can be transmitted to someone receiving that, but is not detected by any of the tests that we have. The nucleic acid testing does mean that the window period is shorter, but nonetheless, it still remains a period of time where that infection is still transmissible but not detected. The current window periods vary, but for HBV DNA, the average window period is just under 40 days. It's 38.3 days. For HCV, using HCV RNA, it's 4 days. And for HIV RNA, it's 9 days. So those window periods are still there. These are average window periods, and the virus is present, but can't be detected by the testing regimes that we have. They can vary. They might be atypical infection. They may be due to immunocompromised patients or new or different virus variants. And donation during the period, as I said, can be transmitted to the recipient despite being undetectable. In terms of marker frequency in blood donations, there have been studies looking at this going back to the mid-1990s. Since 1996 up until 2010, the marker frequency in blood donations for HTLV, for hepatitis B surface antigen, for HCV, HIV and syphilis have been going down both for new donors and for repeat donors. And for repeat donors, the levels of these infections is lower. new donors, the infections of all of those are higher. But year on year, there's been a decrease in both new and repeat donors, on average about 3% per annum. And for HTLV, for which testing started in 2002, again, we see a decrease in those markers of infection and blood donations. So the good news is, in terms of infections, they're going down, but still remain an issue for blood services. And the risk behaviours in infected donors, there have been studies looking at that. From 1996 to 2010, screening identified 4,672 markers, marker-positive donors. And in 2009, heterosexual sex was the most likely route of infection by 37% of all infected donors. And that was the main reported risk for acquiring HIV and syphilis. 8% had a high-risk partner, either an intravenous drug user or a history of men who have sex with men or commercial sex. 10% reported sex in HIV and AIDS endemic countries, and 19% reported sex abroad in other areas. From 1996 to 2008, of 356 HIV-infected donors reporting sex as a risk factor, 29% were men who had sex with men, and 44% were heterosexual. Of the 4,672 positive donors, 88 reported paying for sex or having a partner who paid for sex or worked as a commercial sex worker. The majority were new donors, 84%, and were male, 91% were male. 9 were HIV positive, 13 had chronic HPV, and 46 were HCV positive, 1 HCLV positive, and 19 positive for treponemal antibodies, and that is syphilis. Only one of those 88 donors revealed a history of having worked as a commercial sex worker. Within the UK, we have a system called SHOT, that's Serious Hazards of Transfusion. It's a passive system of recording any transfusions transmitted due to blood donations or blood transfusions. There's no monitoring of these infections in the UK, and we don't have the data broken down by new or repeat donors. So the data is limited, but we do know that the last confirmed HIV transmission was reported in 2003, and that predated the use of HIV NAT tests. The data that you'll see on the presentation shows you the infections from 1996 to 2008, and it includes a number of viral and parasitical infections. So what about men who have sex with men, HIV and compliance? You'll recall that in 2006, the committee had asked for compliance studies to be undertaken. We know that the level of HIV risk between 2003 and 2008, that is, the probability of not detecting an infectious HIV blood donation, was estimated to be 1 in 4 million donations. And the range for those estimations, for that estimation, is from 1 in 8.3 million to 1 in 2.2 million donations. The outcome of the compliance study was interesting. Survey respondents, over 32,000 men, were asked about sexual experiences with men. The refusal rate was 5%. Just over 1,000 men, 1,028, 3.2% of those reported any same-sex experience, men who have sex with men. And they completed the blood donation module, asking them about various aspects of blood donation. Nearly half had ever had oral or anal sex with a man. 25% had done so in the previous 12 months. 11% of men who had sex with men had given blood since becoming ineligible. So they didn't adhere to the deferral criteria. And 2.5% had donated blood in the previous year. And the compliers and non-compliers with the deferral didn't differ demographically. They were very similar. And following up in the qualitative interview participants of 8 non-compliers, the possible non-compliers, 19 compliers, provided additional information When asked about potential revisions, for example, to the deferral criteria, it was thought that individual gender-neutral risk assessments were ideal, but maybe complex and expensive. That was from the qualitative studies. That a five-year deferral was widely perceived as being tokenistic, poorly risk-based, and by some retrogressive in terms of the responses, both in the qualitative and the quantitative study. A one-year deferral was generally viewed as being a step in the right direction towards an acceptable exclusion aligned with other criteria. For 47 of the men who had sex with men, survey respondents, changed rules would not have affected their motivation. They wouldn't have been. They wouldn't have changed in any way how they behaved. And a one-year deferral would have conferred eligibility on 46% of the men who had sex with men within that survey. This is probably complex. This is the most complex slide you see once you actually get it. I'll try and talk you through it. Within the report that we published, which is available on the SABTO website, you'll see a table which looks at the modelling of the impact, the estimated frequency of HIV-infected blood being released into the blood supply under the current, or what were the current criteria, that is lifetime exclusion of men who have sex with men, and alternative scenarios. That work was undertaken by Davison and colleagues at the Health Protection Agency, and they looked at changes, they took into account changes in testing in recent years, the introduction of HIV NAT testing, and the change in estimated prevalence of undiagnosed HIV infection. They looked at the residual risk of HIV donations being released into the blood supply between 2005 and 2007 for a five-year deferral period and a one-year deferral period. And they also looked at no deferral as well. What you need to know from the data that I have is that for a lifetime exclusion of men who have sex with men, that was what we started with, the number of donations or HIV positive donations would be 1 in 4.4 million donations. And obviously there are confidence intervals around that. And rather than the individual point estimates, it's the direction in which that goes, which is important. If we were to accept men who had sex with men, a five-year deferral period, that would rise to 1 in 4.39 million donations. And if we took into account that there may be 100% compliance, then that dropped to 1 in 6.23 million. And that's for men who have sex with men deferred for 5 years. For a one-year deferral for 12 months, again, if there was no change in the instance and non-compliance, it would be 1 in 4.38 million. It would rise to 1 in 4.1 million. But again, the most important thing was if there was adherence to the deferral criteria, then we would see a drop in the baseline incidence, both for a five-year deferral period and a one-year deferral period. If we accepted all men who have sex with men with no deferral criteria, we'd see a change in the baseline incidence of just over 26%, 26.8%. But both for a five-year period and a one-year period would see a fall if there was compliance with the criteria of about 29%. Not much difference. So the crucial thing in the modelling was the issue about compliance with the criteria. In terms of commercial sex workers, infections in commercial sex workers, there's limited data available on the prevalence of infection in commercial sex workers. And there are clear differences, we know that, from the limited evidence that we do have between on-street and off-street sex workers. Intravenous drug use was identified as a significant risk factor for infection, and evidence from what we have suggests there's a falling prevalence of HIV within this group. In a study of 268 sex workers, 61% of whom were migrant in London, the prevalence of any acute infection was 6%, chlamydia and gonorrhea being predominant, and the prevalence of any past infection was 3%. HIV in 1.1% and syphilis in 2.2% of the population. The steering group looked at a whole range of social and legal issues. Blood components are products. They're defined as such by the Consumer Protection Act. As I said earlier, the Equality Act of 2010 prohibits discrimination on grounds of sexual orientation by a public service provider, with the exclusion given to blood transfusion services. So it's not unlawful to refuse or accept donation of blood if there's evidence that it puts the public or the donor at risk. Lifelong deferrals have been felt to be discriminatory and reflect prejudice and stigma, and that's undoubtedly the case. And society now is less accepting of perceived unfairness or discrimination, and the exclusion of men who have sex with men conveys that marginalising message. The blanket ban, we felt, on men who have sex with men undermines the confidence in safer sex messages. And we also felt that sex workers should have the right not to experience discrimination. However, as we'll come to the conclusions in a minute, we'll see the differences that we made in relation to men who have sex with men and commercial sex workers. In terms of ethical issues, the donation and use of blood and blood products within the UK health system we could describe as a moral enterprise. The health service has a moral obligation to ensure that vulnerable patients are not put at risk unnecessarily. It needs to protect donors from harm, and it needs to not to unfairly discriminate against donors. As I said, it's morally permissible to exclude specific groups from donating blood based on risk rather than a certainty of a transmissible infection. And no donation is risk-free. And considering the deferral criteria, it was also necessary for us to take into account the evidence of the level of risk transmission of a bloodborne transfusion, the level of risk, whether it was sufficient to justify treating donors differently, the criteria for defining the high-risk blood donor group are fairly set, avoiding unnecessarily wide criteria, the feasibility and resource implications of setting narrower parameters of will that work, for example, within the transfusion service, and whether there's reasons to treat different donor groups differently. For example, if there's evidence of the effect of change of the blood supply and blood products for patients from specific racial backgrounds. Provision of blood and blood products requires high levels of trust in the service itself, and engendering and maintaining that trust, it's more likely, if it's based on the available evidence and publicly accepted values, if those that have been affected have had a voice in that process, and if changes to policy are transparent. We looked at a number of options, no change, but we rejected that as the evidence that we had, we felt, did not support permanent deferral for men who have sex with men. There's a falling prevalence of transfusion-transmitted infections. The reliability and resilience of testing regimes is much improved, and there's no significant impact between a five-year deferral and a one-year deferral on the modelling that we saw and the evidence that we saw within the group on men who have sex with men. A deferral based on sexual behaviour, which has been proposed, for example, in Italy, and indeed by some of the reviewers who reviewed our draft report, was rejected as being impractical in terms of implementing within a blood transfusion service, a blood service. And there's little data available from the countries who have adopted similar policies. So we have very little data, in fact, from Italy, which claims to have a deferral based on sexual behaviour. And there was some evidence that this may discourage donors. And so we looked in more detail at the fixed period of deferral, and that's why the modelling was done on the 12-month and 5-year options. The recommendations that we made, we excluded, after consideration, commercial sex workers. So the deferral criteria for commercial sex workers remains the same, and that's based on the evidence or lack of evidence that we have at this point in time. The evidence we suggested did not support the continuation of the ban on men who have sex with men, even if a condom or other protective aid was used from donating blood. But based on the evidence that we had on the epidemiology and natural history of infection, it supports a 12-month deferral period since the last occurrence to be introduced for men who have had anal or oral sex with another man, whether a condom or other protective was used or not. And that's the recommendation that we made. And that was what was published. It was accepted by 3 of the 4 countries within the UK, within Scotland, Wales, and England. In Northern Ireland, they declined to follow the recommendations which we've made, and it's still to be seen how that plays out in terms of the blood services, because the UK, although it has 4 different blood transfusion services, really acts as one in terms of its broad policies that it has. And on the 9th of September, that was made public. And The Guardian talked about the outright ban on blood donations from gay men being scrapped. The Times talked about blood donation ban on gay men lifted, but campaigners say no sex rule unfair. And The Sun was quoted as saying, gays okay on blood, as is the wont of The Sun. I was going to stop there. Very happy to answer any questions and take any comments.